the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. You know, the explosion in Obamacare costs, it is making headlines, even in the government media. They've been forced to cover this. Of course, this was nothing new. We knew that this was coming. We told you about it ahead of time several years ago. Even when looking at the Obamacare plans, we knew that it would be expanding in cost as it went, regardless of what the politicos happened to say. The outcome of this year's election, however, will actually impact future medical costs even further. And the critical decision will be, do we have a single payer system, which was ultimately the goal in the first place to drive us towards a single payer system? Or are we just going to repeal the law, scrap it all together and start over and look at some kind of meaningful healthcare reform, which we did need? Or I guess a third possibility would be to try to, quote, repair, end quote, the current system while keeping it going, although I would be suspicious of that because I know that the real goal is to manipulate us into a single payer system where people say, oh, I guess we just got to do this. But any way you slice it and dice it, the election here is going to affect medical care in retirement. It will affect retirees, and that will be the subject of our conversation today.
Yeah, it's not just that it's going to impact medical care, John, but it's also taxes as well, because both candidates have a different view in terms of how to stimulate the economy. But let's begin where we were last week, and I guess the headlines over the last week, which was the Health and Human Services report that came out that said average Obamacare premiums are jumping 25% next year. As we talked about on the program last year, depending on which state that you live in, depending on the number of insurance companies that are in the exchanges, because as we discussed last week, more and more of these insurance companies are pulling out of the exchanges. The fewer companies that you have, the more likelihood you're going to see premium hikes. And the more hikes you see in premiums, the less that you're going to see younger people, which drives this whole cost spiral. As we talked about last week, you know, some states like Arizona will see 116% increase in their Obamacare premiums. But the average overall is about 25%, with 38 out of the 40 states experiencing double-digit increases. And as we have talked over the last, probably several months, basically there is a 23% increase coming to Medicare next year if you are fortunate enough as individuals or couples and you make $85,000. And this has to do with the medical care costs going up. But unfortunately, for all people on Medicare, there is a provision called Hold Harmless, which means that if you're under $85,000, they can only increase your Medicare premiums as much as the same increase they're giving you in your Social Security checks. And I think next year, you know, Social Security checks are expected to go up about 2%. So if you're under $85,000, you might expect a 2% increase in your Medicare premium. So it's pretty much going to take away any gains you have in Social Security. But unfortunately, the way the law works now, and this was George W. Bush that put this into effect when they added Medicare Part D, there is a tiered pricing system now in Medicare. And once you go over $85,000, you get into that upper tier where the premiums could be 2 and 3 times as expensive as the regular Medicare premiums. And that is going to go forward. And John, it's only going to get worse.
We need to put some background on this, Jim. And I remember these fights because I was doing talk radio in Denver at the time. The contrast between the two candidates right now. In the 1990s, remember, we were going to have this healthcare system, and President Clinton appointed his wife Hillary, now the Democratic candidate for office here, to be in charge of this whole process of creating this radical revamp of the American healthcare system. And recall, they did it somewhat secretly. They were all going to meet together with all these experts and then close the doors on it. Well, that, of course, created a huge backflush, I would guess, from people who said, you know, you're going to do what? and you're going to design this whole system without our input, et cetera, et cetera. So ultimately, it was scrapped. Later on, it was resurrected again as Obamacare. And remember that the original goal was a single-payer system. That remains the goal in the minds of a lot of these people, that we need to go to a system very much like the Canadian system, even as the Canadian system, we know, Jim, is eroding because of its own financial issues. And we're hearing talk again today of moving towards this. And the way they would do this, because I just heard this talk, I've been listening carefully to the debate on this, and that is they're saying, well, maybe the new proposal, maybe the government needs to create an insurance company as well. So the government would have an insurance company that competes against the private insurance companies out there, many of whom, of course, are already bailing on Obamacare simply because they're taking such hideous losses. Well, that's your interim step to a single-payer system, because a government-run company can operate in a state of bankruptcy, Jim, because it can be sourced, you know, it can be supported by tax monies, and the private companies can't do that. So this is obvious. It would drive them out of business, leaving one competitor in the market, wouldn't it? And that's where we'd head. Now, Mr. Trump's attitude is repealing the whole thing, and I haven't heard him talk much of whether or not we are supposed to start up again, because we did need healthcare reform. We needed pricing and structure reform before all of this. What we didn't need was a new unworkable system.
If you take a look at the assessment that's going on right now, and especially as more and more companies drop out of the system, young people aren't joining because it's just simply too expensive. No young person today is going to spend several hundred dollars and have a $5,000 deductible. They're just looking, you know what it's like when you're young, you feel you're immortal. So the experts are saying three things are going to happen. Either one, if nothing's done by either party, it'll collapse as a result of its own weight. It's not sustainable. The second would be, even if Hillary Clinton got in, assuming that we still have a divided Congress, there would be some sort of Band-Aid approach that would be added to it. So basically, it would sustain it for a few more years until the next election cycle. The third one, depending on, let's say, Mr. Trump winning, it would be actually repealed. It would be repealed and say, look, let's start over. We need health care reform. One of the things that Trump wants to do is basically make insurance premiums competitive. In other words, instead of just shopping for the insurers in your state, you could shop nationwide for insurance to find the cheapest policy. So he'd bring competition in. I'm not sure what they would do with the people that are already covered under Obamacare, if they shift them to Medicaid, as many of them are, or how this would take place. The problem is, for many of you that are married or single, and making $85,000 or more, your Medicare premiums are going to go up 23% next year. Your deductibles are going up 23%. And in 2018, everybody's Medicare premiums are going to be going up, because simply the system is bleeding red ink and losing a lot of money because of its inefficiencies. So like it or not, your medical costs are going to be going up, if not double digits as they are next year, high single digits. And so in 2017, 23% hikes are coming to 30% of all of you that are on Medicare right now. And those costs could go up even more in 2018. There's already a couple more major insurance companies that are pulling out of markets, and some are pulling out of the exchanges completely. So basically, John, as you're saying, that's why they're resurrecting the talk of a government insurance company that would be subsidized by basically the taxpayers, because the insurance companies are losing billions and billions of dollars, and they're pulling out of the exchanges, which is why it isn't working.
But I should point out, Jim, that they actually knew that this was coming. I mean, when they were putting this together back in the late 2000s, they understood that this is where we would be. However, you have to recognize that medical expenses in people's retirement can reach, you know, $250,000 easily, and a large chunk of their budget because of the things that happen during old age. And we know that you have to factor this into your retirement planning, and this election will radically affect the type of planning that you have to do. And I wanted to let listeners know that our guest tomorrow on the program is James Maskell. His book is The Evolution of Medicine, The Movement to Solve Chronic disease. And of course, in some cases, such as hypertension and diabetes and other diseases like that, these have long-term profound effect upon people's lives. And if core causes could be found and prevented, that would save a lot in the area of chronic disease. So that's going to be interesting tomorrow. Jim, let's turn to the subject now of taxes, because there are proposals both for public and corporate taxes on behalf of both candidates, but it's also going to be tangled up in the support for whatever medical care system we come up with. So let's jump into this subject, and it does affect retirement planning as well.
Well, let's kind of take our listeners back, and we're going to have to cover where we are right now with taxes, and then we'll examine the tax plan of both individuals in terms of, you know, what this means. And one, we're going to cover an item that has been really slipped in terms of its coverage, and that's the impact on investment markets, which impacts you as a retiree. But first of all, let's get to where we are right now in terms of tax brackets. Basically, for most individuals, if you're single from $37,000 to $91,000, you're in a 25% bracket. If you're married, $75,000 to $151,000, 25%. Then the 28% bracket is from $91,000 to $190,000 if you're single. $150,000 to $231,000 is the 28% bracket. So the vast majority of people that are listening to this program are probably in that category. If you're working and making over that amount, $190,000 to $413,000 puts you in the 33% bracket. $231,000 to $413,000 puts you in the 33% if you're married. $413,000 to $415,000 puts you in the 35% bracket. Only a $2,000 difference, and you move into the 39.6% bracket. Versus if you're married, making $113,000 to $467,000, you've got maybe a 30, 40, almost a 50,000 spread. So a little bit more favorable if you are married, and that'll put you in the 35% bracket. $415,000, you're in a 39.6% bracket. Let's round it off. 467 puts you at 39.6, but that's not counting the additional Obamacare taxes, the additional phase out of itemized deductions. So when you're up in that higher income category, you're basically in a 44% federal bracket.
So if Mrs. Clinton is elected, what would her tax plan be?
Well, she would create a series of what we call surcharges, and that is a 4% surcharge on anybody that has adjusted gross income of $5 million. So you're talking roughly about a quarter million people in this country. She would also do something called the Buffett Rule, which would establish a 30% minimum tax on taxpayers with adjusted gross income of $1 million. I hate to tell her, but there's already a Buffett Rule. It's called the alternative minimum tax, which is 28%. And it certainly affects people well below $1 million. There will be 6 to 8 million middle-class taxpayers this year that will get hit with the alternative minimum tax. The minimum would phase in between 1 million and 2 million. Also, she would limit the value of itemized deductions, except for charitable deductions. Don't forget, they have a charitable foundation, to a 28% bracket. Let's put this in perspective. Let's say you had $10,000 of itemized deductions, and you were in a 35% bracket or a 39.6% bracket, you would only get, in addition to the phase out of your itemized deductions, you would only get a 28% bracket. So in other words, today, if you were in a 40% bracket, you had $10,000 of itemized deductions, you would save $4,000 in taxes, 40% of the $10,000 in deductions. Under her plan, if you're in a 40% bracket, you're not going to get the 40% bracket savings. You would only get a 28% bracket savings, meaning on $10,000 of itemized deductions, you would only get $2,800. And folks, this is one of the things that we've been emphasizing here on the program. Gradually over the years, beginning with Obamacare in the 2012 tax bill, which began to phase out itemized deductions and exemptions. That's where they are going. The Democrats want to get rid of itemized deductions so there you would have no deductions at all, and they can just tax whatever your tax bracket is. So that would take it a step further. The other thing she wants to do, and this is one that is really, I'm surprised Wall Street has not picked up on this. Right now, if you own an asset, a stock, a bond, investment real estate, any kind of investment asset, if you own that investment over a one-year period, it gets taxed at a more favorable tax rate, anywhere from 15% to 20%, depending on your bracket. Well, that would change. What she would do is implement a six-year holding period for capital gains, favorable capital gains treatment. If you own a stock and sell it a year instead of the 15 to 20%, you would actually pay 39.6%. If you own the asset 2 years, you would pay 36%. After 3 years, you would pay 32%, 28% after 4 years, and 24% after 5 years. And then she would raise it to 20% from the current 15 in year six. So, John, basically, this is bad news for Wall Street. It's bad news for investors. Let's say you own a stock and you want to receive the more favorable capital gains rate. You would have to own something for 6 years. So this would dramatically change the composition of the investment markets, because how many individuals are like Warren Buffett who buy a stock and hold on to that stock forever, as Buffett has done with companies like Coca-Cola and other holdings like American Express that he owns. So imagine having to own a stock or, let's say, investment property for 6 years. Otherwise, instead of the more favorable 15 to 20% capital gains rate, what would happen is you would basically pay ordinary income taxes on your capital gains. So you could imagine, John, the impact that this is going to have on the investment markets, because, you know, there's a lot of trading today. We've had this rotation in this bull market where we go from the risk on to the risk off trade, depending on what the Fed's doing or what crisis we're dealing with. I mean, this would dramatically alter the makeup of how we invest today. The other thing that she would do, which would impact a lot of individuals, and especially in this low interest rate environment, is they would cap the amount of money that you could have in a retirement plan. Once you reach $3.4 million combined with all your retirement plans, you would no longer be able to have anything over that. Anything over that would be taxed at 100%. So let's say you had, let's say you had $3.4 million in your 401k, you roll it over into an IRA, and the stock market goes up, and the value of your account goes up over $3.4 million, it would be taxed, and you would have to either pull it out and taxed as ordinary income, or the government take 100% of it. They do this with defined benefit plans. So they would limit the amount that you could put away in a retirement plan, which is ironic, given the fact that we are facing the lowest interest rates in history. $3.4 million does not buy you the same level of income it did 10, 15 years ago. The other thing she would go after, and this is something she has in common with Donald Trump, she would go after carried interest as ordinary income. This is where hedge funds get the bulk of their pay and it's only taxed at 15%. She would get rid of that. She would also expand the child tax credit by $1,000 for children under 5 years, taking it up to $3,000. And she would provide tax relief for families by providing a 20% credit for caregiver expenses and up to $5,000 in tax relief for excessive health care costs, basically the government's health care program.
It's really interesting when you realize that people who are retiring, this will affect their income as well based on their investments. But what's really interesting is that there seems to be a lot of support for Mrs. Clinton from Wall Street when this would radically change their investment environment.
Yeah, it really would. And that's surprising because the bulk of revenues that have gone into the Clinton campaign have come from Wall Street. So you just wonder if this is just a proposal for election purposes to appeal to voters, or does she really mean it? Because when her husband was president, he raised capital gains rates to 28%, and then it just had a devastating impact on the markets. And a couple years later, lowered them from 28% back to 20%. And nobody's really talking about, and especially Wall Street. And since Wall Street is the biggest contributor to her campaign, you wonder whether this is something serious or just something that she's putting up there to appease, let's say, the Bernie Sanders crowd.
All right, let's pivot to Donald Trump. What are his proposals in this area?
Trump would actually lower taxes. He would take the current 7 tax brackets and consolidate them into 3. There would be a 12% bracket, a 25% bracket, and the top bracket would be 33%. So about 2% lower than where it was under George Bush. He would adapt the current rates for qualified capital gains and dividends to the new brackets. So in other words, if you are in a 25% bracket on income taxes, you would pay 25% capital gains taxes. If you were in a 33% bracket for income taxes, you would pay a 33% capital gains tax. So he would actually, for upper income individuals, would raise the capital gains tax. He would also eliminate the head of household filing status. He would eliminate the net investment income tax. He would also, to help out middle class families, would increase the standard deduction from $6,300 to $15,000 for single taxpayers, and from $12,600 to $30,000 for married couples that are filing a joint return. He would eliminate the personal exemption and introduce other child care related tax provisions. So he is increasing certain taxes. He would make child care costs deductible based on your adjusted gross income. The deduction would be phased out, obviously, for upper income individuals at $250,000 and for married couples at $500,000. He would offer credits of up to $1,200 a year for child care expenses, helping out working moms. He would also create new savings accounts for children or elderly parents or tuition and offer a 50% match of contributions. The other thing he would do, and once again, folks, this is a trend that we're beginning to see over the last decade. It's coming both from Democrats, mainly from Democrats, but it's also coming from Republicans. Here's Trump. As a Republican, he would cap itemized deductions at $100,000 for single filers and $200,000 for married couples filing jointly. And he would get rid of the carried interest for hedge funds. And for middle-class families, he would eliminate the alternative minimum tax.
Well, that will be interesting on the AMT, because the AMT does need some kind of reform right now. It's striking people that it was never originally intended to strike, given to inflation and various income changes that have happened since it was enacted. All right, so that is the plan for both candidates on the part of private individuals. Now, how are they going to deal with corporate taxes? Which one are we going to start with, Clinton or Trump?
Let's start with Clinton. Clinton would establish what she calls a financial risk fee on large banks. So based on their portfolio, you know, it's not quite clear how this would take place. But if you are a risky bank, maybe you have a lot of derivatives, you're making risky loans, she would charge a fee. She would cut small taxes for small businesses by expanding expensing, increasing the number of businesses that are eligible for cash accounting, because right now we use accrual accounting. She would eliminate fossil fuel tax expenditures. She would establish tax credits for profit sharing and apprenticeships. She would reduce the estate tax exemption. This is going to affect a lot of Americans. Right now, the exemption is $5,450,000, and the estate tax would begin at 40%. She would reduce the $5.5 million exemption by $2 million, drop it to $3.5 million, and she would increase the tax rates above that to 50%. And then, of course, if you're worth larger amounts of money, when you start getting into the Mega Millions, she would increase the estate tax to 65%. Basically, the government would take 2/3 of your assets. Also, she would double tax the estate and get rid of what is called a stepped-up basis in cost. Because let me give you an example. Ronald Reagan put this in effect to save individuals that were losing their businesses and farms due to double taxation at death. Let's assume that you have $1 million of capital gains in your estate and you owe $1 million in estate taxes. You die. Under the current plan that exists today, the capital gains would be forgiven at your death. You would still owe the $1 million in taxes. So let's say your heirs had to sell $1 million of assets. They wouldn't have to pay any capital gains. They would just simply sell the assets, pay the $1 million estate tax. Well, under Clinton, you would be taxed twice. You would owe the $1 million in estate taxes, and when your heirs sold your assets with $1 million in capital gains, they would pay the additional 20% in estate taxes plus any other taxes. So she would get rid of the stepped up basis in cost. So large estates that would be subject to estate tax would have further shrinkage through capital gains taxes. And she would also put a fee on high-frequency trading, which would further reduce liquidity in the markets in addition to the 6-year holding period on assets. So it's always amazing to see why Wall Street is in favor of this.
All right, and Mr. Trump's view on business taxes?
One of the key things in his platform is, look, there's almost $3 trillion of untaxed profits by corporations overseas with companies like Apple, Intel, Microsoft. He's saying, look, we're going to lower the corporate tax rates in the United States from 35% to 15% and make us more competitive because right now our tax rates are the highest. He would eliminate the corporate alternative minimum tax. He would allow firms that are engaged in manufacturing in the U.S. to choose between the full expensing of capital investment or the deductibility of interest paid. So this would be done to encourage capital investments. He would eliminate the domestic production activities deduction in all other business credits except for R&D. He would enact a repatriation of foreign profits. In other words, this $3 billion that is overseas, he would say to companies, look, if you bring it back here and use it to create jobs, you can bring that $3 billion back and you'll pay a one-time tax of 10% versus the reduction of corporate taxes to 15%. So if you bring the money back, we're even going to make it more favorable and tax you at 10%. He would increase the cap for tax credit for employer-provided health care, and he would eliminate the estate and gift tax, but disallows the stepped-up basis for estates. So basically what Trump is going to do is, look, there's only 250,000 families out of 300 million that would be subject to estate tax. It's not a big revenue raiser for government. So what Trump would do is he would eliminate the estate taxes, but saying, look, you're not going to get the stepped-up basis in cost. So going back to the example I just talked about, the $1 million of capital gains, if the heirs would sell off the assets, the $1 million of capital gains, they would owe capital gains taxes, but they wouldn't own estate taxes. So you can see here, John, there's a major, major difference in terms of how these plans would impact the economy.
As you were talking here, I was just thinking that in addition to the impact on taxpayers, either private or corporate, what do you think the economic impact would be actually on the economy of the plans, either of Mrs. Clinton or Mr. Trump?
The Tax Foundation took a look at both of their tax plans. Under Clinton, the 10-year GDP growth would be reduced by 2.6%. Under Trump, it would increase from 7 to 8%. 10-year capital investment growth would decline by 7% under Clinton. It would go up between 20 and 24% under Trump. 10-year wage growth would decline by 2.1% versus under Trump. It would go up from 5.4 to 6.3. In terms of job creation, there would be a net job loss of about 700,000 under Clinton versus, let's say, a job gain of between 1.8 and 2.2 million jobs under Trump. 10-year static revenue, and I need to define that term, because under static accounting, what happens is they don't judge the impact of what happens to taxes as a result of changes in economic growth. Under Clinton, it would be $1.4 trillion plus side income. Under Trump, it would be a reduction of $4.3 trillion. Under dynamic revenue, under Clinton, it would only be $663 billion and a deficit of $2.6 trillion. Under Trump. So faster growth rates, faster wage growth, faster investment, because basically as a businessman, Trump's plans are designed to stimulate capital formation, stimulate manufacturing, job growth, and basically the repatriation of all of that money that is sitting overseas because of corporate taxes here. So faster economic growth. We saw that under Reagan when taxes came down. We saw stagnant economic growth under Obama with the high tax rates that we have today. So pretty much, John, that summarizes both candidates. And it's absolutely amazing that nobody's talking about this in the financial press about what's going to happen to capital gains, how this is going to impact the investment markets.
I know this same subject, Jim, you discussed at the strategy conference, which happened in San Diego last week. Could you give us some examples? I know it was easy to present this when you had slides up, but can you give us some examples of, well, let's say, what this would mean for individuals, Mr. and Mrs. Lots of Bucks. Let's start with that.
Well, we actually took a case study of a client of ours who's a medical doctor with income, him and his wife. Their income was $485,000. And under the Clinton plan, their tax would go from basically $169,432 to $174,791. Their taxes would go up by roughly $5,400. Under a Trump plan, their taxes would go from $169,000 down to $158,000. Their taxes would go down by $10,638 for almost a drop of $11,000. So you can see how, depending on your income, the size of your estate, medical care, this election is big, John. I can't think of a more significant election that we have faced in this country. We'd probably have to go back to 1980 when Ronald Reagan was running against Jimmy Carter with all the difficulties in the U.S. economy. At that time, we were stagflation. Inflation was running double digits. We had experienced two recessions, one in 79 back-to-back and one in 81, and estate taxes were 70%. And that was based on anything over $175,000. Small businesses, farms were being lost due to estate taxes. And also, we didn't have the stepped-up basis. And believe it or not, there used to be estate taxes on the death of the first spouse. So the outcome of next Tuesday, when you're listening to this program on Monday, things are going to change in one direction or another under each candidate. So we wanted to give you a glimpse of that, not only on medical care, but also on tax planning as well.
And a reminder for our listeners, our guest tomorrow on Lifetime Income is James Maskell. He's author of the book, The Evolution of Medicine, The Movement to Solve Chronic Disease. And what's interesting, Jim, is I've had my doctor get on my case about things such as weight. And I would say, okay, you give me a plan that works and I'll go on it, but you have to guarantee it. And then he would get very, very quiet, you know. And I'd say, see, and I finally said one day, I said, okay, shut up. Never talk to me about it again if you don't have a cure for it. Of course, we're on a real good relationship. And so I said, finally, you know, the whole issue of, say, weight gain alone is contributory to diabetes, to blood vessel disease, hypertension, heart disease. I said, I think you would guys have this nailed by now, but they didn't. So this is an important thing, the movement to solve chronic disease, and that's coming tomorrow. Now it's time for our lifetime income study, which, of course, is based on somebody's real life. We simply change the names to protect the privacy, but it is an example of how we're able to work out some of these ideas we're discussing here on Lifetime Income.
This case study was basically, we're calling this How the Next President Could Affect Your Taxes. This is Lucas and Elena Miller. Lucas and Elena are both age 47. Both want to retire at age 65. Lucas' age based on his health questionnaire, life expectancy 88, 92 for Elena. Risk tolerance moderately aggressive with growth with capital preservation, as you might expect for somebody in their 40s accumulating for retirement. Lucas was a software developer. He's been working for the same company since college up to this point. He has managed all his own investments, but is becoming increasingly concerned about market conditions and wants help from a professional. He's an aggressive buy-and-hold investor who has large exposure to small-cap and emerging market stocks. He's concerned about taxes after a large raise at work this year and a promotion which boosted his income. Elena is a school psychologist. She's looking for help to manage her finances, especially college planning. Since they have two children in high school, their oldest will start college in the fall, and she's concerned about their ability to pay for it while saving for retirement. So once again, as many people get into their late 40s and 50s, they start realizing, wait a minute, retirement is 10 to 15 years away, and we also have, you know, those conflicting savings goals, one saving for retirement, and the other one of kids entering into college. And so obviously, you know, both of these were objectives that they wanted to obtain. So what was important to the Lucases? Basically protecting their nest egg, minimizing taxes, especially with Lucas getting more concerned about some of his small cap investments. They probably corrected the most here recently. How to pay for a college education, and once again, saving for retirement. Essential budget, basically $145,800. Discretionary, $97,200. A lot of that was travel and entertainment. Lucas's salary, now $225,000. Elena's salary, $90,000. They had a surplus of $72,000, so they could actually save money, and we felt they could probably achieve both of their objectives. In retirement, basic budget would back down to about $86,000. Discretionary spending would go down to about $77,000. Both pensions from where they work would be $45,000. Social Security at that time would be $56,000. They would have a shortfall of roughly $62,000. Looking at their assets, their primary residence was $620,000. Mostly paid off. Lucas's retirement plan with the company, $632. Elena's retirement, $265. $265,000 in their joint accounts, which is pretty good given their age. So total investment assets, $1.1 million. Total net worth, $1,007,000. So looking at their objectives, they wanted to reduce risk in their investment portfolios, manage those competing goals of saving for college and saving for retirement, and like all of us with these high taxes now, minimizing the taxes they paid. So basically, we sort of took a look at, not doing anything, how they would compare given the various tax proposals of both Secretary of State Clinton and Donald Trump. Their taxable income would be $294,000 after their itemized deductions. Currently, as it stands right now, their income taxes would be roughly about $73,000. Under Clinton, their taxes would go up to about roughly $75,000, not much, about a $2,000 increase. Under Donald Trump, they would save roughly about $6,339. So you can see there, the difference, I mean, it's a little bit at the margin, but increasing your taxes by almost $1,500 versus a reduction of $6,300, it makes a major difference. So what did we do? For minimizing taxes, we took greater use of tax loss harvesting. One of the problems was Lucas was involved in a lot of mutual funds. And as many of you know, right around this time of the year, November, December, if a mutual fund took capital gains, they make those capital gain distributions to you. So depending on the outcome of the election, we wanted to recommend some tax loss harvesting to Lucas, that any losses he had in his personal portfolio, that he offset any gains coming from his mutual funds with losses on any of his holdings. Elena would also begin to maximize contributions to her 457 plan, and max it out, the 457 plan will allow her to save $18,000 a year in their tax bracket of roughly 33%. You know, that would save them roughly almost a third of that, which would be $6,000 or $7,000. The portfolio would be repositioned to focus on dividend payers and short-term bonds, because not only does that reduce risk, things like consumer staples pay higher dividends. They're taxed in their bracket at the 20% level. For college, they would use a laddered bond portfolio to cover future anticipated expenses. They would commit to paying the cost equivalent to a four-year public university, and the kids would cover the difference on their own if necessary. So basically, they said, look, we needed to do a balance here between saving for retirement, reducing their taxes, as well as paying for their college education. So basically, we looked at they could afford on their income to pay for state college for both their kids. And so that was the agreement. As long as the kids decided that they were going to go to a state university in the state of California, they would pay for those college expenses. If they wanted to go out of state, any other expenses, the kids would have to finance themselves either through student loans, scholarship, or another means. But that was basically how we solve their particular needs. And once again, they also wanted to take a look at, as all of us, given the outcome of this election, which is dramatically going to affect healthcare in this country, as well as taxes overall and economic growth. And in their case, their taxes would go up roughly about another $1,500 under Clinton versus about a $6,300 deduction under Trump.
Well, Jim, if people are listening to this program before Election Day, hopefully this program will help you decide on which way you want to vote when the time comes. But if anything, we should remind people it's important to go out and vote.
Absolutely. It's probably one of the more important presidential election cycles that I've seen probably in my lifetime. So very important that you do go out and fulfill your obligation as a citizen and do vote on Tuesday. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.